When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, folks, and welcome to the A to Z Sports Big Orange Podcast. I am Charlie Burns. That is Zach Reagan, wherever you listen throughout the world. We thank you so much for listening to us. Zach and I talk everything balls every week here on the Big Orange Podcast. And if that's something that you want to listen to on the regular, go over to the A to Z Sports Podcast Network feed on Apple and Spotify. When you get there, rate, review, but most importantly, subscribe to the show, because if you do, you won't miss our shows when we drop them on Mondays. It is not Monday now, but that's because of Christmas. It is Thursday. But regardless, I'm kind of lost in terms of what day.
Very lost.
Doesn't really matter, because New Year still has to hit. But regardless, it is actually a Thursday for anybody that maybe has like a job they were supposed to go to. By the way, it's still the middle of the week. You might want to check your days there. Go to YouTube when we're live, as we are right now at this very moment at 7 p.m. Eastern time on Mondays. And you can be a part of the show. You can tune in. You can comment. We love going back and forth with everybody that comments, that watches. It's a ton of fun. A to Z Sports Nashville YouTube channel. And you can watch the show and be a part of the show. And it's a ton of fun. Subscribe. Hit that notification bell. Yada, yada, yada. At @Charlie_Burris. At @ZachTNT. At A to Z Sports. Facebook.com/A to Z Sports Nashville. And A to Z Sports.com for everything that Zach writes on ye old internet. Man, we put this show off until Thursday just because that's the way stuff fell. I just had stuff to do until now with the holiday and all the traveling and everything that you got to do. It's everybody knows. We all do it. And the timing could not have been more perfect, because yesterday, around 10 a.m. on what would have been the December 27th, we got the news that everyone has been waiting for. It is the Nico Iamaliava era at Tennessee. He will be your starting quarterback in the Citrus Bowl. Obviously, we're going to cover all of that tonight. What's up, Zach?
Man, I didn't think we'd actually be talking about this a couple of days really before the bowl game. I'd resign. Even when it started trending this way over the last few days before Christmas, around Christmas. And I still was like, I don't know. This feels like a setup. It doesn't feel real. Like we're going to have the rug pulled out from under us. But here we are. It's exciting. We're going to all be watching this bowl game anyway. But it just took everything up a few notches, I feel like, knowing that we're finally going to get to see Nico in that starting role and see him as the guy out there leading the team. I'm excited to see him in that role just as much as I am to see kind of what he does on the field.
Yeah, it's just it ratcheted everything up 10 levels as far as this bowl game goes, because I think a lot of people were just kind of like, it's Iowa. It's probably going to be a boring game. And the score, if Tennessee wins, the score is going to be like 19-16, something atrocious like that. And so, there wasn't a ton of excitement. And then suddenly the Nico era is here. It is his time. Well, let's go ahead. Let's get into it, because that is going to be the full thrust of the show. Obviously, Nico. Maybe let's talk about the defense some, because the defense is going to be a completely new look. Let's just preview the bowl game in full. Maybe we'll talk about the college football playoff too, and kind of what's going on there and what we think might unfold. And we'll talk about it all right after I tell you about our first great sponsor, and that is BetterHelp. If you are a Tennessee fan like myself and Zach, you know
How many years the Big Orange have shaved off your life with the emotional roller coaster of college sports? Or maybe the roller coaster of life is messing with your happiness, preventing you from achieving your goals, regardless if you have a clinical mental health issue like depression or anxiety, or if you're just a human being going through a hard time. Therapy can give you the tools to approach your life in a different way. And that is where BetterHelp comes into play. BetterHelp's mission is to make therapy more affordable and more accessible. And this is an important mission because finding a therapist can be hard, especially when you're limited to just the options in your area. BetterHelp's platform makes finding a therapist easier because it is online and remote, and BetterHelp can match you to a professional therapist in as little as a few days. Plus, with our link, betterhelp.com/ATOZ sports, you get 10% off your first month. So see a therapist because maintaining your mental health is just as important as maintaining your physical health. So this football season, check out betterhelp.com/ATOZ sports, ATOZ SPORTS, and save 10% on your first month with BetterHelp. Big thank you to them. I got a graphic this week for BetterHelp. So that's nice. I was missing one last week. So as I said, on Wednesday, 10 a.m., there wasn't the announcement that that it's Nico time in Tennessee. It was first the announcement that Joe Milton and his time at Tennessee was coming to a close. He was going to be opting out of the bowl game. And that's kind of the thing that makes this a little awkward. Let's be completely honest here. And I think most Tennessee fans, this is the feeling. You watched Joe Milton this entire year, and you went, thank you for your service. That could have been better. Yeah, you know, hey, I really like you a lot. Joe's great. He's super loyal to Tennessee. That's amazing. I wish he was better playing quarterback for Tennessee. Like, it's this kind of like weird mixed feeling around Joe where you didn't feel like the offense was being completely maximized. While at the same time, you look at him and you look at what he meant to Tennessee and you go like, what an awesome guy. Is it genuinely? 100%. It's this weird conflicting feeling because he has been so loyal and sat behind Hendon. Got his spot taken by Hendon, sat behind Hendon, put in his time, finally got that starting spot. And then for this season, was it terrible, off the tracks bad? Absolutely not. He won 8 games. It was one of the better seasons of the last 15 years for Tennessee football. Let's put that into perspective. But it wasn't Hendon Hooker. And it just, you had that expectation in your mind. Joe has this crazy physical ability and it never got there. And by the time this bowl game rolled around that Joe got you to, I mean, obviously he was a part of getting to the Citrus Bowl. Just, you could, all of the fans were just kind of like, let's move on. And you have to wonder, this is kind of a different conversation, but you have to wonder, was the staff also in that group too, kind of being like, yeah, maybe we need to scoot right along and get to the Nico era. I don't know, but that is what came first. I don't know if you have thoughts on Joe there before we dive into Nico here, but that was the precursor to Nico.
Yeah, I mean, the more I thought about it, the more I felt like it was the obvious choice for him to make, you know, before he made his decision. And even then, I still, my gut thought that he was not going to opt out. I thought he would play just because of, you know, kind of the way he's carried himself at Tennessee and what Florida means to him. But from a business standpoint, I think we talked about this a little last week. His best chance to get drafted or to shoot up in the draft a little bit, maybe to the middle rounds, is to have an incredible combine. He has the physical abilities. Go out there and run. Wow with your throws and all the physical parts of the combine. You know, let these teams meet with you, get to know you. All that stuff is just too much to risk for a bowl game against Iowa, where even if you play well against their defense, it's not like, you know, I really didn't think he was going to help or hurt his draft stock in this game against Iowa. If he doesn't play great, I mean, it's one of the best defenses in the country. Yeah, even if you have a great game, it's like, okay, where there's still all these questions from in the season about your development and all this. So the combine was always kind of the best path forward for him. I don't think the staff was in his ear necessarily. I mean, Josh Heupel said this week that, you know, early on, they thought Joe was going to play in the Citrus Bowl. I think they were going to let him have that. I don't think they're sad that this is the way it's happening. I know there's personal relationships there, of course, but I think for the program to move forward, especially into next season, this is an important game for Nico to start. You don't want him starting kind of from day one next season with his first career start, you know, a couple weeks before you play or NC State, a Power 5 team, and then get into the SEC schedule. It just makes more sense for him to start in this game. So it's the scenario that makes the most sense for everybody involved, I think. And most of the time, it feels like that's not what happens, especially with Tennessee football. So it's kind of nice to see these things kind of falling into place as they should. I mean, this is what winning programs do. It's kind of how they handle their business. You see tons of true freshmen, redshirt freshmen, starting in some of these bowl games, getting a head start on next season. Tennessee would just be falling behind if they didn't kind of follow that trend.
Yeah, it's kind of the best of all worlds, I think, because Joe, I don't want to say he saves face. It would have been completely fine for him to play in this bowl game, and it would have been understandable in his hometown and all of these things where he could have finished out his career. But you also look back, and that Vanderbilt game is probably the best game of his career, and he can go out on that and say that was my time. It was senior day. I played the best game of my career. Peace out, please, and thank you. And that can be it. And it kind of wraps his time up nicely. Like I said, winning this game would not have gotten fans to be like, Joe's the best. Like it wouldn't have flipped any opinion there at all. To your point, it would not have flipped NFL opinions. I don't think it would have just kind of been a moot point as far as he goes. It would have just been like, oh, that was a nice bowl win. That's good. And that would have been about it if Joe had chosen to play. I'm with you. I was like, Joe was going to opt out of his bowl game, specifically because it was in his hometown. I really thought he was going to play. And it kind of surprises me there. But I got to think, for being completely honest, Josh Heupel, when Joe made this decision, I just feel like Heupel had to just be like, oh, thank goodness. I'd just be like, "Ooh, it's any kind of crisis averted," because it felt like there was this expectation building of being like, even if Joe plays, you got to play this guy. You got to put Nico in this football game. That was the building expectation. And I mean, you got to think, if there's big money people that were a part of that $8 million deal or whatever was the reality of the situation there with what got Nico to come to Tennessee, you got to think they're kind of like, hey, buddy, it's time. You know, it's time to get a move on here, and let's see what we got in our five-star, you know, mega recruit here. And so that's got to be a relief on Heupel. I just got to think, whether they pushed or pulled any which way there, you know, it's all just speculation to say that anyway. But that's got to be a relief, because you also heard kind of rumblings that it was like if Heupel pulled the plug on Milton, it would cause a little bit of consternation with the team, and maybe they wouldn't have liked that, because Joe Milton is very well liked, and so it's good for everybody. I think ultimately that's nice the way it works.
You see this comment here from VOLS, make a shout out to KSR. I don't have you seen all of that on Twitter?
I think so, because I think I retweeted it.
Yeah, one of the KSR guys said that Joe Milton opted out of the bowl game because he was afraid to face the Iowa defense, which obviously not true after playing in the SEC, but the kicker to all that is that Will Levis opted out last season in their bowl game against Iowa.
Against Iowa. Like, come on. Like, dude, you got to think about that for 2 seconds and just be like, okay, maybe I'm not going to tweet this.
And Joe Milton beat Kentucky on the road. I mean, you have that too.
Come on. Will Levis never beat Tennessee? Joe Milton literally beat Kentucky at Kentucky this year. Give me the biggest break, boys. Like, come on. You're better than this, maybe. Honestly, they might not be. there's already plenty of comments here. Says it's Nico time. Yes, sir, it is. VOLS says turns Joe Milton has a hard time making decisions both on and off the field. He did kind of wait till the last second.
That had to be by design to some extent. We saw the video of the Iowa player who learned right after their practice yesterday that the freshman's starting, and he caught him totally off guard, and he's like, you know, we haven't really watched much film of Nico, which, to be fair, there is not a lot of film. You're still going to watch the Joe Milton film and what the offense has done all season, but it's a different threat you're preparing for with Nico. So I think for sure there's some gamesmanship with the announcement. I mean, Nico's been preparing as the starter for a week now, since kind of around the early signing period. So Tennessee's known about this for 7-8 days. There was just no reason for Heupel to let everyone else know about it until now.
I agree. I think it all, I mean, even that choice, I think if it was completely conscious and there was gamesmanship there, I think that's a great choice. Make them prepare for the guy that's been playing for you all season long, and then throw in this guy that they have no tape on and that they know is a dynamic playmaker. I think that's a really exciting fold in all of this. But Jesse in the comments says, go Vols. Welcome to Florida. Thankfully, I'm not in Florida. I guess I wouldn't mind going to the game, but I don't want to be in Florida any of the rest of the time. James says, what's up? And then I wanted to get to this one. Charles, he says, we're going to see how good Nico is. He will be going against the second-ranked defense in Iowa. So here's the thing to talk about with Nico. So obviously it is his time. The $8 million man or whatever actually happened there. And Joe passes the torch. He's been learning under Joe. He mentioned that in his press conference. They let Nico do a media session. And he really emphasized that he has, Joe kind of brought him under his wing and has been working with Nico. And you got to think he has been with this team. If am I thinking correctly, correct me if I'm wrong here, Zach, since last set of bowl practices before the Orange Bowl last year.
Yeah.
Yes. He was in those bowl practices.
A sophomore at this point.
Yes. So you're talking a full blown year that he has been with this team, learning from Heupel, learning from Joe Milton, just seeing the system. I guess back then with those bowl practices, Hendon would have still been around. So he's even hung out with Hendon. And so I look at this setup and it's really a win all the way around, because if he goes out there and he puts up a little bit of a flop of a game, you know, just isn't that good. Maybe throws multiple interceptions or something and just isn't super sharp. You can go, hey, first start ever. And that might be a little bit of meltdown mode from the hysterical people. But ultimately, I think when you really think through it, you could just be like, hey, it's his first full starting football game at the college level ever. That's whatever. But then you break it down. If he has a really good game, the hype is going to be completely off the charts this coming season. That's going to be wild. And I really hope that happens for his sake, for everybody's sake. It'll be a better offseason if that happens. But I genuinely think he's had time now, because we said it all season long when people were like, oh, let's just replace Joe. Let's put Nico in. We said all season, we were just like, you don't want to go trial by fire here. You don't want to throw this guy into the deep end at Alabama. That's a terrible decision in this swamp. You know, that is just not the way you want this dude's career to go. And I like this neutral site. It's not going to be super hostile. In fact, I'm going to bet it's going to be probably 60-70% Tennessee fans, if not more, honestly. And it's, you know, neutral site, kind of away from both schools. And it's not going to be overly loud one way or another. And just kind of a good environment for him to learn in and create a base for how he feels with this team. I think it's a great setup. I don't know how you feel about it.
Yeah, I mean, win or lose, obviously you want to win the game, and Josh Heupel's made that clear. It's going to take everybody on that field, not just Nico, because you're going to have a lot of young players playing at some positions, running back. Not sure if the offensive line's going to look like totally yet. Heupel kind of said they're healthy, but we'll see. You know, there's more gamesmanship there. But win or lose this game, it's so huge for the development of Nico. I mean, you need this game film, especially against this type of defense, which we'll get into later. It's just exactly the type of experience that he needs going into next season. So he's going to learn a lot playing against Iowa. Whether he goes out there and lights them up, throws a couple of interceptions, doesn't have a great game, whatever it is, whatever happens, just getting all this on tape is huge for the development of him as a player and you know, going into next season. So it's everything about it is as good as it could set up for his first career start.
I agree 100%. It's just a nice kind of entree into college football instead of just, here you go, SEC football. You know, just the biggest, baddest dudes in this game, and you got to go play them in your first start ever. No, to the point in the comment there. Yeah, Iowa is no pushover. I don't think they're known as kind of a bum rush, you know, sacking guys six times a game sort of a team, which that's good, but they are really just fundamentally sound. They don't give up much, period. Obviously, you're not going to have Jalen Wright, which that's big. Dylan Sampson could be an absolute dog. Cam Seldon seems like he has a ton of talent and just needs to be given the opportunity. And he's finally going to get it here, I think, at least more of an opportunity than he has during the regular season. But you're not going to have your Jabari Small, Jalen Wright duo, and then, you know, Dylan Sampson, again, can be really good, but like Jalen Wright was a certified dog. He was awesome when you handed him the football, and you're not going to have that to lean on.
Jabari Small's big loss with pass protection. I mean,
it is.
Small was
That's
so
true.
Good, so good in yes. pass protection. And Sampson's improved, but he's had some moments there. So you're going to have Sampson has to take a big step. Seldon, like you mentioned, and Khalifa Keith is probably going to play in this game quite a bit too. Yeah. They like to rotate three guys. It's a lot of youth there, you know, especially in pass protection for your true freshman quarterback.
I really wish Dante Thornton could get back.
Yeah.
That's tough because I guess it was a high ankle sprain, but those can be pretty brutal, and you probably I would say save it up for next year at the end of the day.
Oh, and he probably didn't have the tightrope surgery because it's not like you're trying to get back for a playoff game or something like that. So there's really no point in pushing it with him.
Exactly. I pretty much agree with Davey here in the comments. Says regardless if we win or lose, we're already winning by starting Nico GBO. Yeah, I agree. I just think almost no matter how this goes, this is good for Tennessee. And then pat myself on the back. Davey says, great content as always. Thank you, Davey. I appreciate the compliment. But it's a good situation for Tennessee. And if, let's say this, if Heupel was being resistant to starting Nico, because it felt that way like all season, because there were exact moments. The UTSA game, the Vandy game, you know, a few of these where you were just like, why is Joe still in this football game? What are we doing? Let's get this young man in here so we can see what he can do. Like, it seemed very intentional that at certain points, whether it was or not, I mean, I'm ascribing something to Heupel that I don't necessarily know that he was doing, but it felt that way where you were watching, you were just like, but Why is your starting quarterback still in this football game? If for nothing else other than the risk of him getting injured, you know, let your backups get in there. And so now, maybe if Heupel, I don't know, surely he was wanting Nico to get in there. But if he wasn't, here you go, forcing his hand. You got to do it. And I'm really happy about that. And this is a good comment from Todd here. He says, this is really a preview of next year's offense. In some sense, hopefully Brew comes back and Thornton, and then obviously you're going to get the transfer. Chris Brazel. And there's going to be different pieces, but the offensive line, this is basically the offensive line for next year. That's nearly exactly what it's going to be. And I think it's really a good snapshot of what you're going to get next year, kind of how it was last year in the Orange Bowl. Ultimately, and so that's another nice element of this.
Yeah, for sure. And when it comes to Heupel and Nico, I think it did feel like there were opportunities where maybe Nico could have played during the regular season, but at the same time, I think Heupel kind of had his plan. He stuck to it. I don't think it was out of stubbornness, because I don't think this team was more than 8 or 9 wins. I mean, there was Cooper Mays being out, wide receivers did not play up to the standard of last year's team. There's a lot of times they weren't helping Joe out. This was an 8 or 9 win team pretty much all along. But Heupel didn't panic. We've seen it with Butch, you know, when he was the head coach, kind of that, you know, dance with quarterbacks that he would do when he set Worley and started Peterman on the road against Florida, and then let Dobbs finish the season and go back to Worley and try Peterman again and finally settle on Dobbs again. And the quarterback carousel that Jeremy Pruitt always had going on that would eventually go back to Garantano, but you'd have Maurer or Christ or whoever, you know, from time to time. It just felt so much more structured and in place these last couple of years. Like, there wasn't this bouncing around kind of uncertainty. So, you know, it would have been nice. And I'm sure some of those games that you wanted to be blowouts that weren't blowouts, like the Austin Peay game, for example. I mean, I'm sure the plan was to get Nico in some of those games, and it just didn't really work out. You know, I'm okay with most of that from Heupel. I think it kind of played out eventually the way he wanted it to play out with Joe opting out of this bowl game. Obviously, you'd love to, you know, beat Missouri, beat Florida, and be playing in a different bowl game. Maybe Joe plays if it's a New Year's Six Bowl or something like last season. But
yeah,
all things considered.
Funny side note, I saw this on Twitter, but this is just because you brought up his name. Keller Crist is an offensive analyst.
Yeah.
For Iowa. Ironically, he is on Iowa's staff.
And that's, you know, that goes into a deep Iowa storyline too, is they're looking for, you know, a new coordinator. And Paul Crist has been a name that's been mentioned, who is Keller Crist's uncle. So there's a lot there too. It's kind of an odd connection between the two programs.
And funny side story, at the one spring game that I think Keller Crist played in at Tennessee, I sat directly behind his family at that spring game and talked to them for a whole chunk of that spring game. They're like, "Oh, that's our son out there. Oh my God, blah, blah, blah." And I'll always remember that.
Yeah, that was about all you remember of the Keller Crist era, because it was very forgettable otherwise.
That was the whole era. I experienced the entire thing that day.
I think he led like a scoring drive against Alabama, and we were all like, this could be the guy. But that was it.
Finally.
There was nothing else that happened.
Keller Crist, man, what a blast from the past. But all the way around, I think it's a really good thing, a nice preview into next season. And let's make this kind of last thing, because we have more to talk about. But as far as Nico goes, I like this question from Wrecked. He says, "I think having Nico in the game opens the door for more plays to be drawn up." And I would throw it to you. Do you think that's true, Zach? Because if all of the reports are true from practice and things like that, you know, and just what we've seen in the spring game and in his short time playing, more touch on the ball. He's much more slippery in terms of trying to run and do something with broken down plays. And does it actually open the door there more, or are they going to just be conservative and be like, it's a freshman, keep it close to the vest? What do you think?
I think that, do you want to get into a conversation here about the defense?
Right after this. Yeah.
Well, this kind of plays into that whole,
sure,
that whole conversation. So let's save that for the defensive talk here coming up.
Well,
it's a whole encompassing answer, and it's kind of hard to talk about without getting into Iowa's defense.
Well, perfect. Let's go to this next segment. We have bills to pay and sponsors that you know want their stuff talked about. So let's start with this. I do have also one more question about Joe before we can completely move on. Also, and we'll talk about those last couple things about Joe and Nico right after I tell you about Zen Sports. We've been talking about Zen Sports all season long, the new sports betting app exclusively in Tennessee, but we have more big news. Now, when you sign up for a Zen Sports account, you'll receive up to a $1,000 no danger first wager. That's right. When you place your first bet in Zen Sports, you can be reimbursed for the amount of your bet up to a $1,000 maximum if the bet loses. But there's even more good news. Zen Sports has their new VIP rewards program. The VIP program will allow top-tier customers to earn even more bonuses, comps, and perks, but it is by invite only. So if you feel that your Zen Sports play qualifies for VIP consideration, check out the program at zensports.com/VIP. No other sportsbook will offer you a premier sports betting experience with 24/7 top-tier customer support and faster withdrawals like Zen Sports. So what are you waiting for? Get going. Download their app at zensports.com today. Zen Sports betting just got better. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. You must be 21 or older in Tennessee to bet. And they had this promo earlier today. Here it is right here. They tweeted it out. Make a $50 straight bet on Thursday night football, Jets versus Browns. And if the bet loses, get a $25 no danger first wager on the Cowboys versus Lions. Your first straight bet on the game only counts towards the promo, one per customer, and allow 24 hours to credit your account. So that's just for tonight. For anybody that's watching live, get in there. Get your promo bet in on Thursday Night Football. Shout out to them. Oh, that's not our... That's a different graphic. Maybe producer Matt can join us there. Okay, so this was the last thing with Joe to finish out that conversation. Then we'll get to Nico and the defense. It was a comment here. Let me find it because I want to give everybody their flowers here. VOLS. We've read a few of his comments tonight already. He said, "Does Joe Milton ever play in the NFL in all reality?" That's kind of to wrap up that conversation about Joe and him saying that he's going to prepare for the NFL. Where do you think he falls? I think he'll get drafted. I'm not sure where. I mean, he's a physical freak. The potential's there.
Yeah, I think he's going to be drafted. I don't know. It's so hard to say right now where he will be drafted, because the combine is going to impact that a ton, and we'll see how everybody reacts to the combine and all the little reports that come out from how his interviews went and stuff like that. The Senior Bowl as well that he's participating in, all that stuff will play a huge part in his draft stock, which is why it was so important that he does not get hurt in the Citrus Bowl, because that's going to be key for him. I think he ends up on a roster, but then he's going to have to fight his way up a depth chart and get a chance. He's going to have to play well in preseason action in some of those games where it's the third and fourth string out there, guys that know they're not making the team, and it's kind of hard to shine in those moments. So, you know, everybody, it seems like, eventually gets their chance. You stick in the NFL long enough, there aren't that many quarterbacks to go around. I mean, it took Josh Dobbs six, seven seasons, but he finally got a chance to go out there and start some games. Nathan Peterman has got a chance to start several games on Buffalo and Chicago. I think Joe Milton's better than Nathan Peterman, at least what I've saw of them in college. So it seems like, yeah, Milton's eventually going to maybe get a chance. I don't know where it takes him. I'm not counting on him as a can't-miss prospect. Truthfully, I'd be surprised if he ended up being anything more than, you know, second, third on a depth chart. That would kind of maybe practice squad bouncing around. It's tough to make it in the NFL. And, you know, we'll see. It'd be interesting if somebody keeps him on the roster just for, like, some Hail Mary situations, because we've seen several situations where teams need a 70-yard bomb, you know, from the 30-yard line, somebody get into the end zone, and not many people can do that. That would be an interesting thing. You know, does he get a roster spot because of that capability?
Yeah, I think he's such a, like, over-the-top physical specimen where he's just so big, so strong. Surely there's got to be something he could carve out there. And worst case scenario, if, you know, you work hard enough, one of the best jobs in the world is a backup QB on an NFL team. None of the responsibility.
Being a quarterback in the NFL, even if you're not starting, is such an incredible accomplishment. Oh. I know people throw shade at third-string quarterbacks, but you're one of the, you know, 96 top quarterbacks in professional sports if you're on that roster.
And none of the responsibility and all of the paycheck. I mean, you don't get $30 million or whatever, but you get like $1 million to sit there and do nothing. that's a job I could deal with personally. But I'll put it this way to put a bow on that. I'm really, really rooting for him. I hope he finds a spot and that it works out for him. But let's finish the Nico conversation, talk about the defense some, because the defense is going to be a completely new look in this bowl game. But I like this as kind of a starting point. Chris says, "Has Nico been taking reps with the ones this entire time, or was Joe leaving a new development?" That was kind of how the news started coming out, at least from what I saw, was that it was sort of like, so Nico's taking a lot of first team snaps. And there was kind of this like rumor just like swirling around, and then it slowly turned into, oh, Joe's opting out, Nico's your guy now. And that's, I again, really glad that that's the way that it worked out. But to move into that conversation about Nico, I'll just throw it to you, Zach. The question that we had was, does Nico, now working with the ones, being your starting guy, knowing the talent that he has, does that open up the playbook? Were they not able to do as much with Joe Milton at quarterback? And what does that mean for Tennessee if he has this expanded skill set?
Yeah, I think next season, moving into that, the playbook will be more like 2022. I think Joey Hosley having a year under his belt, even if Josh Heupel's mainly calling the plays, the way that communication goes, what they're seeing from up top, I think he'll be more in the groove with that. So I think all that will be a lot smoother. I think Nico's skill set allows the playbook to be opened up a lot. There's so many different things he can do in the run game where, I mean, yeah, Milton had some speed and had some big runs, but we didn't see the same elusiveness like that we saw from Hendon Hooker. We've talked about that before. Nico seems to have that in the limited times that we've seen him play. So I do think all of that will look much different in 2024. I don't think it'll look much different at all in the Citrus Bowl. So if you're going into this game and you're expecting the offense to be high-flying and kind of look more like it did in 2022 with all these interesting wrinkles, and there still could be some wrinkles. It's a different player, but it's not going to be totally different. It's going to be a lot of what we've seen this year, and that's really because it's what makes sense against Iowa. The game plan against Iowa calls for a kind of vanilla, take what the defense gives you type of game plan because of the way they play. They play a lot of zone coverage, which is something that can get young quarterbacks in trouble because your eyes might not be in the right place. You might not see a safety. You know, it got Joe Milton a couple of times. Some cover two and cover three looks. Iowa's a quarters defense. They're going to play those safeties back. Their safeties are kind of the players in their defense where that's what Nico's going to have to read. They're the guys playing run pass every down. You're going to have to basically guess and read what they're doing based on where, and that's going to, you know, determine where you go with the ball. Because of the wide splits, you're probably going to see a lot of these screens out in the perimeter, a lot of these quick outs to receivers in the perimeter, because that's a way to get 4 or 5 yards almost every down if you execute, maybe more, you know, if you block well. Iowa's tough to run against. They only gave up 120-plus yard run all season. Tennessee, the way they spread it out, we'll have a better chance to do that. But I think throwing those passes out to the perimeter, you kind of keep Nico out of trouble there. Possessions are going to be at a premium in this game. You know, Iowa likes to sit on the ball. They're going to try to run as much clock off as possible. They're going to huddle. They're going to run the play clock all the way down. They're going to try to pick up 3-4 yards every single play and really drag this thing out. And you know, Tennessee might get some three and outs and get the ball back quickly, but you're not going to be able to, you can't afford to waste possessions in this game. And I think Josh Heupel knows that. I think he said, you know, yesterday when he spoke to the media, you know, look, picking up positive yardage on first and second down is going to be critical in this game. So you're not in these third and long situations. So if you're looking for a deep shot on first down, it's probably not going to happen. It's probably not going to happen on second down either, unless it's just there and you really, you know, it's a second and three maybe, and you feel comfortable taking that shot downfield because you like your chances on third and three. For the most part, they're just going to try to take what Iowa gives them, which Iowa, you know, they're not going to play a lot of man coverage, if at all. They might try to make it look like that. They'll do some zone blitzes there where they try to get to Nico, which again makes those quick, you know, those plays to get the ball out of his hand quickly to the perimeter, away from the middle of the field, even more important. So just the way this game sets up, the playbook almost has to be kind of vanilla in what we've seen all season. So it's not, I think when people see that, they're going to be like, oh, nothing's changed at all. But it's more a product of this is Iowa. This is how you go beat Iowa. You're going to have to play that game. That's why I think that'll be what we'll see.
Yeah, I think it's what should work in this game. I think it's the best way to get Nico's feet under him is to keep it simple. And so I think they're going to just do what this offense does best and play the hits, so, you know, and what I think could be different genuinely is I think we said this after the spring game, like Nico made that throw in the spring game to Ethan Davis. That was just really impressive. Like, dropped it right in the breadbasket, just really beautiful. And I remember saying, that is a throw that Joe Milton can't make, period. Like, Joe Milton does not have that. He doesn't have that in the bag. And or if he does, I've still never seen it to this exact day. We went through an entire season. We didn't see it. So he has more of that touch. He has more of that finesse. He has more of that slipperiness. I think you could see the offense, you know, they may not be opening up the playbook, but you could see the offense be smoother. You could see passes go better, have better outcomes than they would have with Joe kind of, you know, throwing rockets in there. And so I think that is a very real possibility. And so hopefully that happens. But Iowa's defense is very, very solid. Top five in all of college football. Really good. Now, we can move to the defense here off of Nico talk. Their offense, Iowa's offense, is very literally the worst in all of college football. 240 yards a game. To put that into perspective, I was just looking at it. I think the second worst, they are the worst. The second worst was like 260 yards a game. So the second worst is 20 yards per game better than Iowa's offense. Insane. Insanely bad. Their scoring offense, fourth worst in all of college football. 16.6 points per game. Tennessee averaged like 32 this year. With Joe, with the kind of stunted version of the offense that it had to play this season without those receivers, with Joe a quarterback, like 32-ish points a game, I think, or something like that. They're scoring 16.6. You're winning, yeah, in my personal opinion, you're winning this game with 17 points. And that's not just to say that's, oh, well, they're going to only score their average. I think Iowa's probably only going to score like 10 points. They're probably not going to score 16. When I just look, Tennessee's defense, your defensive line is essentially going to be your defensive line from the season. That's your strength on your defense. Your secondary, and there have been questions about this, I think multiple questions in the comments here. Your secondary for Tennessee, yeah. The offense for Iowa is absolutely just completely atrocious. I mean, where they even sit with passing offense? Let's see. Fourth worst passing offense, 123 yards a game. How many? Let's see. Is that nine passing touchdowns all season long? So they're not exactly going to throw all over you. Could be a good day to get those young DBs a shot, kind of like with Nico. It kind of feels like this game's a nice entrance into college football. Ricky Gibson, he needs these reps, and maybe Iowa's a good team to start against because it's not like they're going to throw all over them. I'm interested to see how it goes. Obviously, how Nico fares, but how well can Tennessee's defense shut down this offense? Because it seems like you should maybe be ashamed if Iowa scores like 14 points on you.
Yeah, I mean, if you give up more than 14 points in this game, that's a colossal failure by a lot of people. And it does start at the defensive line. I mean, that's if they can get some pressure, and that's going to be tough against, you know, an Iowa offensive line. I'm sure half of those dudes will be in the NFL, you know, right guard for the Patriots or something in a couple of years. They're not going to try to keep up with Tennessee. They don't want this game to be a shootout. They're not going to change who they are. That's just not in Kirk Ferentz's DNA. I mean, he is who he is, and they're hiring a new offensive coordinator. They don't want to change anything about the offense. I think it's just pressure to not have his son as the offensive coordinator is one of the reasons, and I think he has had some other stuff off the field, whatever. They're going to always be this way under him. So this isn't going to be a game where they're like, oh, we're going to target Tennessee's young cornerbacks and try to, you know, create some explosive plays in the pass game. That's just not who they want to be. They want to bleed as much clock as possible so that, you know, even when their offense operates well, they're not going to score more than 20-some points because there's just not enough time for them to score that many points as long as it takes them to score. So it's really – you know, it gets to where it's these limited possessions, and yeah, your defense has to try to stay off the field mainly to get your offense back on the field. I mean, because you know that's where you're going to do your damage. So yeah, you're trying to stop them from scoring, but mainly you're just trying to get the ball back for your offense.
Absolutely, you gotta maximize every opportunity if you're the offense. Obviously, because even against this horrid Iowa offense, your defense will get worn down. If they have to be on the field for, you know, 80 plays, they're going to, will Iowa even run 80 plays a game? I don't know. But if they have to be on the field for a crazy amount of time, that's not good. That's not going to happen. Or it's not going to turn out well for Tennessee. So,
probably
Luman saying, it's
going to wear us down like Luman is here.
Yeah, it's exactly. Luman, your comments aren't blocked. I mean, I see a lot of them. Just a lot of them, you're harassing Tennessee fans, a lot of them. So I mean, I don't know what you want me to do, Luman. Stop being a Vandy fan. There's your solution. Yeah, he said he hit the dislike button. Listen here, Luman. What am I supposed to do? Anywho, go listen to a Vandy show. But yeah, you'll get worn down, and even against this garbage dump offense, that's gonna happen. And so,
look, Tennessee was in a game like that earlier this year against A&M. Hopefully, that experience helps them. But that game is very much kind of what I'm expecting in this game, and maybe we're wrong. Maybe Nico goes and balls out, and the Tennessee speed and wide splits, something that Iowa doesn't see a lot of. Maybe all that is just too much for them to overcome, and Tennessee rolls in this thing. They do have a history of playing pretty well against Big Ten teams outside of that Purdue game a couple of years ago that they did win. You know, we all kind of know that, but otherwise, they've beat Iowa before. They beat Northwestern. They beat Indiana. They usually play pretty well in these bowl games against Big Ten defenses.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
And even in that Purdue game, the offense was fine in that Purdue
game. Yeah. You scored a million points in that game. But it is weird. I just have this odd feeling, and it obviously comes from the past Iowa game, the Northwestern game from a few years ago, all of those where I just go I kind of feel like Tennessee's just going to win this by 20. It might be 20-0 and they only score 20 points. But I just feel like that's kind of a distinct possibility. Maybe I'm wrong and this defense really is the full-blown real deal, but when the rubber's met the road for this Iowa team, they've gotten their doors blown off.
Mm-hmm.
Penn State, completely uncompetitive. Michigan, completely uncompetitive. And Michigan's offense, they played well against Michigan's offense, defense did. But, I mean, it's not like Michigan's offense is some crazy world beater. They win with defense.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe I'm getting out over my skis there, but I think this is an exciting opportunity for absolutely everybody, because you have in that set of DBs, as I already mentioned, Ricky Gibson, and there were some good media clips from him today, but you're still going to have Jalen McCullough back there. Maybe is Gabe Jody Lolly going to play?
I think he's playing. Okay. He's not expected back next season. Probably go pro. But I think he is playing in this game.
And let's see. Andre Turrentine where'd he come from? Ohio State. And you got some of those other young guys that are going to be in that set of DBs.
Jordan Thomas, John Slaughter.
Yeah. Will Brooks, who played in that Vandy game. There's a walk-on.
Yeah.
So, it's to me, this is all sort of the best setup possible. Kind of somebody said it here. Yeah, Rex said, did we really lose a whole secondary when there wasn't really a secondary to begin with? Not trying to be disrespectful, but seriously, I didn't know we had a secondary. We kind of said that when all those dudes started transferring out. It kind of feels that way with Joe Milton opting out of this game, where you went maybe it's good that this is kind of being forced on everybody, because a lot of people said all season long, we were like, these young guys can't be better than this in your defensive backfield. Really? They can't play up to even this level? After you lost Kamal Haddon, and they always defaulted to these senior guys, and you were just like, really? None of these young dudes can play up to this level? Up to this bad level? And so now it's being forced on everybody. Nico is going to be in the spotlight at quarterback. These young dudes are going to be in at DB with the guidance of Jalen McCullough, who's been around for 45 years at Tennessee. I think it's a good it's a good setup and it's a good barometer because Lord knows Iowa's offense is not going to exactly put up a big time fight. At least they shouldn't. Again, if they do, maybe we need to have a talk with Tim Banks, but it's a good opportunity all the way around. But anything else before we get to the final preview of the game, Zach?
No, I mean, just hopefully these young linebackers can stop the run. You're going to have some youth out there too at the linebacker position. It's kind of the one thing we didn't talk about there. So that's big for their development as well, especially playing just kind of a run first downhill team between the tackles. It just wants to, you know, they want to go out there and block you, and you got to get off those blocks, and that's kind of what it's going to come down to. They're going to execute because that's what Iowa does. Can you out-athlete them? Can you get off blocks? That's how you win this game on defense.
I think it's possible. But let's talk about, well, this final good comment here as we go. Chris says, there's going to be some questions if these young guys ball out.
There's no questions. We know that they don't play young guys like they should in the secondary.
Yeah.
Martinez and Tim Banks. I mean,
it's been that way for all 3 years now.
Yeah, it's not. It's clearly not changing. You know, that's something that maybe Josh Heupel eventually, it's like, hey, you know, what are we doing here? We're letting guys just languish on the bench. And then as a transfer portal, NIL deals, you keep on doing that and you're not going to keep these young guys around because they're going to see the writing on the wall because it is Tim Banks' reputation. We'll go somewhere else where we can play as freshmen and sophomores.
Yeah, well, hopefully they do all play.
There's true freshman cornerbacks out there that play and play a lot. I mean, it's not just unheard of anymore. It used to be, but they can come in and make an impact, especially as early as they enroll now when they're almost in the program for an entire year because they show up at bowl game practices.
Yeah, these dudes should be, I don't want to say 100% ready, but they should be prepared. You know, they've been around long enough at this point, even if they weren't early enrollees last year, they've still been around for a minute here, almost a year. So, yeah, we'll see how they play. Now let's talk about it. How this game really might go. We'll give our predictions of this. We're going to give our predictions for the playoff, too, as much as it kind of pisses me off that we have to talk about the fact that Alabama's in the playoff when they didn't deserve it. But, yeah, let's cover that right after I tell you about Farm Bureau Health Plans. Farm Bureau Health Plans have been serving Tennesseans for over 75 years. Much has changed in Tennessee over the years, but some has stayed the same. Farm Bureau Health Plans has always valued personal relationships, especially when it comes to good health and good service. Plan on Farm Bureau Health Plans for health, dental, and vision. For better coverage, better rates, and better service, go to fbhp.com/ATOZ or walk into one of their 200-plus locations across the state of Tennessee. That is fbhp.com/ATOZ. Farm Bureau Health Plans. Big shout out to them. Now, for this game, Iowa, offense bad, defense good. Tennessee, offense not totally sure with Nico, but was mediocre kind of this entire season. Defense bad. defense not bad. Defensive line good. Defensive backs kind of like with Nico. We'll see. Potentially bad, potentially decent. So it's an interesting matchup. Obviously, now I think a lot more people are excited about this game now with Nico playing. How we've been touching on it already, Zach, but how do you see this game going?
I mean, I think Iowa's going to accomplish a lot of what they want to accomplish. I think Tennessee might stop them a few times, get some three and outs, but they're going to hold on to that ball for quite a bit and really limit possessions. I still think Tennessee will fare decently well against the Iowa defense, just because what we talked about earlier, those 5-yard plays are going to be there as long as you execute. Now, it's on some of these young guys that are out there and block on the perimeter. It's on Chaz Nimrod and Caleb Webb to really do their job in those situations. It's on Squirrel, probably. He's going to be catching a lot of these on the perimeter. You know, can he make somebody miss and turn, you know, a 5-yard gain into 10 and really kind of get you down the field? Are they able to run the ball? I think they'll be able to run the ball better than most teams have been able to against Iowa. Because of their safeties, it's going to be really tough to break off some of those, like Jalen Wright, Dylan Sampson 80-yard runs that we've seen in the past, because those safeties playing in that kind of deep quarters coverage, especially when they play against the run, they know they're the last line of defense, and they're not going to provide an opening for some of those long run plays. But can you run between the tackles and pick up some chunk yardage with everything spread out the way it is? I think they will be able to decently. So I think they'll move the ball. Can they get in the end zone? You know, in the red zone, that's been a problem at times this season. Are they settling for field goals? How big are the tight ends in this game? Because I do think the tight ends are one area where you can kind of exploit some of Iowa's defense there in the seams when those safeties are kind of in conflict on some of those RPOs. You know, I think there'll be a mix of success in the red zone and, you know, some settling for field goals or maybe going for it and not getting it. So I think Tennessee, though, will be able to score enough points to outscore the Iowa offense.
The most points that Iowa scored in a game this season was 41 against Western Michigan. The next week, they played Penn State and scored zero.
Oddly enough, Western Michigan is the only – that's the team that had the 20-plus yard run against Iowa. It was Western Michigan. It's the only one
this irony entire season.
And it was really because the linebacker didn't do his job, and the safety's been on the RPO, and that's kind of what happened there. And it still wasn't a 50-yard touchdown. It was a 20-some-yard run.
Again, they're very fundamentally sound on defense. They're not going to allow a lot there. But the very next week after that Western Michigan game, 31-0, they lost to Penn State. Purdue only scored 14. Wisconsin only scored 6. Minnesota beat them 12-10. That is a score of a football game if I've ever seen one there. Iowa beat Northwestern 10-7. Just if you want to know the nature of some of these, 22-0 against Rutgers. Oh boy, 15-13 against Illinois. God, this is the most Big Ten. Oh God, that's horrendous. They didn't play Ohio State.
I do think it'll be, you know, low scoring. I don't think. Honestly, I could see a scenario where Tennessee wins and they only score 2 touchdowns and maybe 2 field goals, and it's like a 20-7, 20-6, 20-10, something like that. I mean, it's hard for me to see anything but that, to be honest.
But here's the interesting part to me, is a couple of things. Can Iowa handle the general speed of Tennessee? Well, Tennessee against like a Georgia, you know, we've talked about, oh, well, we look slow out there. But I feel like relative to an Iowa, Tennessee is going to look like they're running at a million miles an hour in this game. And I'm not just talking like the speed of the offense and the general tempo, like the actual athleticism of maybe Dylan Sampson, of Squirrel White. And on defense, can they handle the aggression of a James Pierce? Something like that, how do those matchups play out? Well, we actually have an Iowa fan here. This is good. This is what I always want in these, and they never. He says UT won't get 300 yards of offense in this game. Iowa's defense is a different animal, so that's what I really want to suss out. Is it really a different animal? Because I look at it, and when Iowa played teams with a pulse, they got their doors blown off. So I'm not exactly just like full-blown convinced that Iowa is just going to put the clamps on Tennessee. Oh, it's over. Penn State's offense this year was not amazing, and they scored 31 on Iowa. No, it was at Penn State, and it's a really tough place to play. And, they had the vaunted Drew Aller at quarterback, who we all heard about all season long, right? I mean, you know, I look at that and I look at the Michigan game. Those were the two, you know, classic Big Ten. Oh, well, you only played like one good game all season long. That's every decent Big Ten. You know, they play like one good game all year. And the one or two good games you played, they got destroyed. So I don't know. I remember having this conversation because I was on the radio back in the first time when they played Iowa. And we kind of had these similar discussions where it was like, you know, Iowa's ranked higher and they've won more games than Tennessee, but it just kind of feels like Tennessee's going to win by like 10. Like it, and then ultimately Tennessee won by like 40 in that game, if I'm thinking right. But I have a similar feeling here. Like, it's just never a great matchup for the Big Ten against the SEC. It just, and you know, anomalies happen all the time in college football. But Tennessee, even with Nico starting and the outlier that was, the line went from Tennessee as a 9-point favorite, 8.5-point favorite, down to 6. Something like that. So Tennessee's still favored. I'm not sure. Maybe I'm off base there. Am I looking through orange colored glasses, Zach?
I think a lot of it is just the whole, to use like a Butch term, it's complementary football, really, is what Iowa does. So it's not just the defense, it's the way the offense plays. It's the fact that they're so fundamentally sound and they're so determined to not give up these big plays. That's why I think that's the one area where Nico could maybe get into some trouble, especially on some of these zone blitz looks. If he tries to throw over the middle of the field on some of these intermediate routes, I think Iowa, they could do some damage there. They love to keep their eyes on the quarterback. So if you're throwing kind of those intermediate routes, they have a tendency to kind of sneak up on quarterbacks. If they can break something over the top, you know, I think Nico can throw downfield without much fear as long as he doesn't underthrow. If he does underthrow, the Iowa DBs do look for the ball. They're not going to be one of these that they're just trying to, you know, keep their head forward and block the pass. They will look for the ball. They will intercept it. So as long as you don't underthrow it, you should be okay. But if you can throw it down the field and get it out there, you'll have a chance to hit on some of these plays. It's just trying to get some of those Iowa defenders in conflict and trying to create some of these mismatches. I mean, if you can get a Squire White in the slot on one of their safeties, you know, you got a chance to hit on a big play then. But it's, you know, it's everything's kind of got to go right for that to happen against Iowa, just because of how fundamentally sound their technique is.
It is, but I look back, like that Penn State game, they gave up 215 yards rushing to Penn State. And they gave up 182 yards through the air and 4 touchdowns to Drew Aller. Again, the vaunted Drew Aller, who, you know, wasn't exactly a standout all season. So I'm probably looking through orange colored glasses. Clearly this Iowa fan in the comments think so. He's having a good laugh over the fact that CJ Beathard was the quarterback of that game, but it just feels similar. It just does. I don't know. I was there back then. I'm here now. It's a similar feeling, and I'm not sure exactly how to shake it. But that's it. Just is what it is. Maybe we're dumb and this guy can come brag during the post game to me and Jonathan Crompton. I don't know. Just for his reference, we'll be back halftime post game of the bowl game. Myself, Jonathan Crompton, former Vols quarterback. And so for Tennessee fans or the Iowa fans that want to tune in and we'll be talking about the game no matter what happens, win, lose, rain, shine. We'll be on there at halftime post game here on the A to Z Sports Nashville YouTube channel. Tune in to watch that. But I just have that feeling. So let's predict this game. But let's not only predict this game, let's also predict the college football playoff here to end things off, and then we'll reconvene after the new year and after this game happens, Zach. We'll get right to it here with these predictions right after, as always, I tell you about Rattle and Snap Tennessee Whiskey. Nothing goes better with a Tennessee sports victory, like the one that the Vols will have in the Citrus Bowl, than a great whiskey. And I'm talking specifically about Rattle and Snap Tennessee Select Straight Whiskey. Logstill Distillery has a Tennessee whiskey product line called Rattle and Snap. It's a whiskey for those who make their own luck. There's a 4-year and an 8-year version, and we've had both on the show, shown both on this show. Obviously, I've had whole bottles of both in across many sittings, not in one sitting, either of those, but still great bottles of whiskey. They go great in cocktails And also, they're awesome just to drink neat in a glass. You can find Rattle and Snap in stores across the state of Tennessee, but they're also available in Kentucky, Indiana, Mississippi. Run, don't walk to get Rattle and Snap whiskey for those Tennessee sports victories. Again, to get it before the Citrus Bowl. You're going to need it after Tennessee wins this one. Follow them on Instagram at Rattle and Snap Whiskey. Huge shout out to Rattle and Snap. They are the best whiskey around. Been with the show for a long time at this point. I'll throw it to you, Zach. We fleshed it out. It's going to be a hard fought, probably low scoring game. How are you feeling? What's your prediction?
Yeah, I think Tennessee wins this game. I think it's kind of like the way I described it. Not a lot of points, but I think they're going to outscore Iowa. They'll have to kick a few field goals in the red zone. They'll stall out some drives. I think Tennessee wins, like I said, 20-7. That's what I would have.
I like it. I like it a lot. I'm probably going to be pretty similar. I'll say Tennessee finds a way to get to 24. I just like the outlier of Nico. Do I think that Nico is going to pop off and have an otherworldly game? I don't. But to your earlier point, I think this just sets up well where he can play the hits, as I said, you know, lots of screen passes, be his slippery self, making something out of nothing, and hand the ball off to the incredibly dynamic Dylan Sampson. And I think Tennessee is going to have a nice little game here. And, you know, it's probably going to just be 300-ish yards of total offense, I would guess. But it's enough. And I'll say, yeah, Chris says 24-10 in the comments here. I'm probably something like that. I'll say 24-13. I'll give Iowa three more points. We're on the edge of needing to have a conversation about the defense, but they hold them to 13. I'm a little more optimistic about Iowa's offense, but yeah, I'll say 24-13 in relative to Iowa's season, an extremely high scoring game. That would just going to blast through that over. What even, I wonder what the over under is in this game.
32. I don't know.
It's got to be something like that. Let me find here. Oh, I don't have it just up in front of me. Dang it. Oh, I got to put in a verification code. Crap. Well, whatever it is, I'm sure it's low. We had some earlier predictions, man. They were way up here. Chris said 24-10. Daryl says Tennessee by 50. Billy Bob says 24-9. 24 is kind of that magic number, it seems like, for Tennessee predictions.
36.5 is the over-under I see here.
36.5. Okay. Yeah. I mean, what? 24-13, you would be just squeaking it out.
You're betting the over. I'm on the under here.
Yeah, just barely. So I don't know. I'm just optimistic. Obviously, with Nico looking through big time orange colored glasses, because I want that kid to have a huge game. It would be so fun if he has an amazing game. So fun. Do it on the ground. Do it through the air. I don't care how you got to do it. I just hope that he has some magic moments in this one. Makes a couple of incredible passes. Does something where we go like, oh man, like this is our guy. I just want some moments like that really, really badly, because yeah, things go off the rails. It's gonna be a different offseason. So now with that said, let's just predict this. Alabama plays Michigan, I believe, isn't it? It is the
first
the
game.
It's the game after Tennessee's game, I think.
It's the four o'clock, four something. Yeah,
yeah,
you're right.
I want to say they're like in succession, like Tennessee's game happens and Bama Michigan comes that day, I think. I have to confirm that. But will the damn Crimson Tide and the Little Demon, will they be playing for another national championship, Zach?
I think they will be. I think Nick Saban has, you know, his whole thing is taking it personal, making it personal. And I think he has the last couple of years, losing to Georgia, everybody talking about the, you know, the decline of the Alabama dynasty and all this. It's kind of like one of those last Super Bowls that the Patriots won. or just felt like, yeah, we're still here. This is almost over. Everybody knows it's almost over. Saban can't coach forever, but we're not done quite yet. I just have that feeling. I think there's a ton of distractions at Michigan. Harbaugh, this contract, is he going to the NFL? Is he not? The sign-stealing stuff, which is kind of coming back up again, you know, with some of the comments this week from Alabama players, or they're trying to, I think that's some gamesmanship too, which I get. Alabama's playing their best football of the year, I think. Even though I don't think they should have been in the playoff, I do think they were probably one of the best four teams in the country at this time, and I think they'll beat Michigan. I don't really know the score. I mean, I don't know, like 31 to 20. They managed to score some on Michigan.
Michigan's a powerful team. I said they would beat Ohio State, and they did. And I was kind of saying all season, probably the funniest part of that entire whole sign-stealing thing was that even without the sign-stealing, Michigan's a good football team. Like, they really are. Their offense is meh. Their defense is absolutely elite. I'll say, obviously I'm being hopeful, but I'll speak it into existence. I'll say Michigan wins. They are the favorite at the moment, 2-point favorite as of right now. I mean, it's in the Rose Bowl. It's in California. It's not like there's any kind of like, oh, it's in Florida, way closer to Alabama, you know, nothing like that. And they
New
just
Orleans, split tickets. It's almost surprising it's not in New Orleans.
Exactly. And thankfully the Tex Washington is the Sugar Bowl there. So there's really no advantage there. I'll say Michigan pulls it out. 21-17. What'd you say?
I said 31-20.
I'll say 21-17. I say it's real low scoring. Cause it's so crazy that Alabama beat Georgia, but when you really break it down, like Alabama nearly lost to a dump Auburn team.
Yeah. And well, that game is always weird though. Like it was strange.
Auburn. I mean, I just look and like Jalen Milroe. Hey, he somehow beat Georgia, but I mean, he's not like the dude. He's talented. He's definitely talented. He's very fast, but still, I just think against that Michigan defense, they bring the heat. And the main thing is Michigan has to find a way to score. And I don't know if that's going to happen, but hopefully they can just run. Blake Corum, give that man the football, win that football game. So I'll say that. And then Texas Washington, to me, the one that I won't watch with seething anger. It'll be a little more fun, but it is the late game, 8:45. That one will probably wrap up around 2 a.m. Who's playing for the national championship? Will Texas truly be back finally?
I just hope Washington wins because of all these Final Four teams. I think most Tennessee fans are pulling for Washington. You should be.
Same.
If they win the national championship, that's the team that has the least impact on Tennessee. Or really anybody. You know, you don't want Texas, another SEC team, soon to be SEC team, coming into the conference, you know, holding a trophy. Michigan, like, just go away. They're just obnoxious and kind of annoying at this point with Jim Harbaugh. And I don't know. I just don't even like nothing against Michigan. I'm just kind of tired of hearing about them. So I hope Washington beats Texas. I do think the offensively, I mean, it's a great offense. It's going to be hard for Texas to stop. Texas is a weird team anyway. I'm not, you know, they beat Alabama when Alabama wasn't as good as they are now. They lost to Oklahoma, who was, I don't think, as good as their record indicated. I'm not totally sold on Texas. And I think they're favored in this game, but I'm just not. They'll have a little home field advantage with the game being in New Orleans, but I think Washington can outscore them. That has the potential to be kind of high scoring, I guess, but I'll still go like Washington 38, Texas 28.
Texas is a 4-point favorite. It's in New Orleans, so I think there's definitely going to be a Texas tilt in the crowd. Mm-hmm. I think that was probably going to be the case anyway, just because of the large size of that fan base. I'll say the Washington wins because of that offense. Texas has been flirting with stupid losses all season. They nearly lost to TCU and some different, you know. I'll say that they finally got there, and Michael Penix plays for a national title, which that would just be really fun. They get, yeah, get rewarded for having such a powerful offense. Roma Dunzi, I would love to see that. Kid's a killer. I want to see Washington go all the way. I really like their coach. Let's go with that. And obviously I am being hopeful. Michigan, Washington, I'll say Michigan wins a national championship. We can't escape it. It's not going to be that easy. Just one of these teams that we don't want to win is going to win, I think.
Yeah. But if it plays out like I think, I would probably say Alabama wins. And maybe that's just me hoping for some reverse karma there for Alabama's sake.
Never bet against Saban.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I just feel like it sets up for this like revenge tour for him.
But did he spend up the magic against Georgia though? That's kind of what I don't
know.
Think,
maybe like, bad karma. Maybe they get there and they lose to Washington, and it's bad karma for, you know, taking Florida State's spot. Yeah, maybe.
Man, that would be nice.
I'm doing my part. I'm putting it in the universe. Doing all I can.
Please. I will say this. Please, Michigan. Please. It's for America. Really for the SEC, because I feel like America doesn't really care. For the SEC, please. Yeah. Not for Florida State. I don't really care about Florida State, ultimately. But just, no more Alabama. Go away. Shouldn't be there anyway. Evan says, what's up? What's up, my man? Evan, longtime listener. Thank you, sir, for tuning in. This has been a good show. That is the show. Charlie Burris, Zach Reagan. Thank you, thank you, thank you to everybody for watching. Evan, Daryl, Samuel, Billy Bob, Chris, even the Hawkeye 5, the Iowa fan that tuned in, General Nealon. Who else we got? Wrecked, Jeff, Charles, Jason. Thank you, thank you, thank you to everybody who watches every single week. Tune in, myself, Jonathan Crompton, halftime, post-game. Wanted to have Crompton on here before the game, but I just, like, my schedule didn't work out. It's been kind of frustrating, but so I'll just advertise it here. Tune in to the halftime post-game show with me and Cromp, and we will be discussing the Iowa game, and hopefully Nico will lead the Vols to victory. Good times. Anything else before we bounce out of here, Zach?
No, I think that does it. Hopefully everyone has a fun and safe New Year's coming up.
Yeah,
here.
Don't go too crazy, because the bowl game is the next day, obviously.
It can be amateur night out there. Be careful.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. It's always a little dicey on New Year's. Always fun, but be careful. We want everybody back here hanging out with us every week. So, Charlie Burris, Zach Reagan, thanks again for watching, listening, however you take in the show. We appreciate it every single time, and we will talk to y'all next week.
See you guys later.